first thing in the morning, as soon as you wake up, the to-do list starts.
Does the car need gas? Hopefully those leftovers are still good. Why did I get CC'd
on Mom? No.
No.
You can't escape the to-do list, but you can make the most of your me time with a relaxing shower using Method hair care products. Try Pure Peace Volumizing, Simply Nourish Moisturizing, or Daily Zen Shampoo and Conditioner for daily use. All formulated with long-lasting fragrances and are safe for color-treated hair. Reconnect with the best version of yourself. Visit methodproducts.com to unleash your inner shower.
Welcome into another episode of Bare Bones. As always, I am Mason West, and again, fortunate enough to be joined by Dr. Michael Rischer. MT as I call him, Dr. MT as some call him. I mean, it's all over the place. I know you're pretty chill about that. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. How about you? It's good to be on here.
Yes, I think this is one of my favorite segments we get to do. I mean, we mess around with mock draft stuff. We talk about other stuff, but the fact that we get to sit, chat, do a little more of that next level convo of rehab, performance training, it's really, really cool.
Absolutely. Yeah, this is my favorite. I love, you know, there's a lot of different podcasts that I go on with strength and conditioning and, you know, talking about what we do with the Bears, but to actually talk to other therapists about what's going on is a lot of fun for me.
Well, let's dive right in. I know you got a busy schedule. We're talking about Darnell Mooney today. You get to work with a lot of different Chicago Bears. He's one that I know I've been excited about. Bears fans love him. But unfortunately, he did have an ankle injury last year. If you want to go check out what I thought it was, you can look. It's in my Twitter, I guess, what it was. We're not going to dive heavily into that. But we're going to talk about how you're going to rehab back from a, we're just going to say a severe ankle injury. At least that's what I thought it was. So take us from the beginning. You have someone that walks in. Let's like break into two categories. You have someone that's post-op and you have someone that's not post-op. How would you treat those two differently day one? And then let's say 2 weeks out and then 6 months out.
Yeah. So a lot of it is the only difference is if you're post-op, everything is delayed until you're weight bearing. If you're not operative, then you can start certain rehab protocols sooner. You know, operation, you obviously wait a little bit, wait for the tissue to heal a little bit more and the joint to be stable. So obviously you start with decreasing pain and getting a lot of the swelling out. That's a given for both. Lots of soft tissue. I love contrast for that, which is for those of you that don't know, it's alternating between ice and heat. A lot of people go just for ice, and I found that just research doesn't really back that. It causes a lot of lymphatic leakage, and you don't actually, like, the swelling is less in the area, but it doesn't actually filter out. It doesn't actually help the tissue heal. So kind of alternating back and forth between ice and heat in one setting is awesome. The Normatec boots are great for flushing that out. So a big thing early on is get rid of the inflammation, swelling, and pain. And then after that, you can start to work on strength and stability and proprioception, and kind of in that order, go super, super light, super, super basic to start, like just building up the muscle again. I know you're a big fan of the BFR stuff, the blood flow restriction stuff. So that's, you know, always on the table. And it's a lot of just making sure that every single muscle that supports the ankle and intrinsic muscles in the foot are functioning properly and are starting to gain strength. Then once you've started to build up the strength and you feel like you have a requisite amount of strength, then you work on the stability and the balance and the proprioception. So that's kind of how you progress them. The, you know, they're about the same rehab wise once you hit a certain point, but surgically, you know, you have to delay that a little bit. And then obviously the trauma with the surgery is significantly higher. So there are a handful of other soft tissue things like Graston one or two other things that you keep in mind with any screws or plates that complicate it slightly as far as what you do, but doesn't really affect the long-term outcome, which is really good. So that's kind of the brief overview. Biggest difference is just, you know, time delay before you start the intensive rehab process.
Yeah, you mentioned BFR, that blood flow restriction training. I do love it. I think it's something you can start so much earlier. For those who don't know, basically it's a tourniquet. reduces blood flow down to the leg. You do it at 80%. Arm is 50%. And what it really does is it allows you to work at about 30% of your one rep max, but get results like you're working at your one rep max. Reason being, it increases human growth hormone. It decreases myostatin. Myostatin inhibits strength, muscle growth. So it basically just, you can say, tricks your body into like going into this overdrive of strength training. And it's great because it does not put stress on the ligaments, the tendons, the bones that might be healing, but really just makes the muscle work. So it's a really great way to, especially in that protective phase when someone might be in a boot, in a cast, something like that. It lets you still get a lot out of it. One thing you mentioned, I'm curious.
To progress so much faster, because a lot of the times guys are very itchy to get going, but you just can't do as much. So if you add the blood flow restriction, then it increases the perceived intensity like that. And now all of a sudden you have, you know, just that the person that wants that drive and really wants to make it really hard, you can make it really hard without making it really heavy.
And if you haven't had a chance to, you should definitely try it. First of all, don't go get a kit on your own. You're going to kill yourself. But if you do get a chance to try it in a rehab setting or under with a trained professional, like Dr. Risher, you don't know hard until you've done BFR. At least that's what I feel.
Yeah. I used to do it back in the day. I used to do it for my arm days. We did bicep. We just wrap a band around. It wasn't, you know, it was not scientific at all. We just wrap a band around our arms and just pump out a ton of curls. It was hilarious.
Then you get vascular as hell and you just, you know, look good for the ladies.
Yep, exactly.
So what are some of the difficulties that you find working with ankle injuries? Like, what are some of those hurdles that ankle provides, the foot provides, that maybe one of the other joints don't?
Yeah, there are just so many bones down there. You know, that's a big thing. It's not just one joint. People think, oh, it's your ankle and it's one joint, but there are so many joints in there. So like, yeah, you may have one joint that's moving totally fine, but then another joint that's completely stuck and all of the ranges change. And so that's a big complication, is that you just have to figure out which joints aren't moving well and then mobilize all of the joints. And then there are so many intrinsic muscles in the foot that you have to make sure you stay on the soft tissue, and then you're strengthening everything, you know, adequately. You're not missing any of the ranges of motion. If you know what you're doing and you're good with the anatomy and the kinesiology of it, it's not a difficult thing to rehab, but there are a lot of pieces that you have to check into. So I think the hardest part is just making sure that you go through the entire checklist and you're covering all your bases, because there is a lot to do. That's probably the biggest piece. The thing that I find, you know, is best bang for your buck is actually going, yes, working on the ankle, but working up closer to the knee and then continuing up the chain. So you're making sure that the hips still moves well. You're making sure that the knee is not getting stuck in any ranges, especially the fibular head. And so you kind of move up the chain just a little bit, and that kind of amplifies the results later on. You're not necessarily going to see the ankle heal any faster, but once you get back running and stuff, if you've maintained working up with, you know, fib head, hamstring, quad, all the hip, that kind of, you know, speeds up the later portion of the recovery.
So Darnell specifically is going into a pretty important off season, right? Contract talks, things like that, yada, yada, yada. In your experience, not specifically with Darnell, but just with NFL players in general, you know, how much do they think about this? How much are they just purely focusing on their craft year ahead, and what happens?
Yeah, I think a lot of guys can get caught up in the contract talks and, you know, obsess over that. But there's so much you can't control, and so it starts to eat away at you. Darnell's not like that at all. He's going in. He's taking care of what he can take care of. And, you know, he's at the end of the day, he knows he's going to be taken care of. So he's just going in, controlling what he can control and working incredibly hard. So that's, I mean, just like from the get-go, anytime someone would mention contract talks, it's like, yeah, you know the conversation's going to happen, but that's not anything that he's worried about or anything that he's concerned about. He's going and trying to be the best version of himself every day.
And then without diving into too many specifics here, considering what Darnell had to go through and what he's still going through up and leading up into it, expectation wise, you know, is day one, snap one, is he on the field?
Yes, absolutely. 100%. He'll be back for week one. He's doing really well, and I don't see anything slowing him down. He's going to be definitely ready for week one.
And that was also my expectation too, just based on what I thought the injury was. I didn't have any concerns about it, but I know Bears Twitter is all a bluster with concerns. So it's nice to have another voice saying the same thing.
Yeah. You just look at how much time there is to recover from something like this too. If he's a rookie, then you're like, oh wow, he has to learn the playbook, but it's his second year in this same system. And he's really, really sharp with that. He's already got a good connection with Justin. So, he has actually a luxury of time. He's progressing really well. He's awesome. He's going to crush it. He's going to throw everything he has into it. But there is a luxury of time. This is not like your ACL where, a year after you're still wondering if you're 100%. That's not the type of thing this is. I think you saw Tua have an ankle injury and he came back mid season, So there are guys that it just is unfortunate it happened when it did, but there are guys that come back significantly fast and you don't really see a huge drop off in their play. You saw Patrick Mahomes play with an ankle injury in the Super Bowl and win the Super Bowl. So these players' bodies are really resilient, and Darnell has the luxury of a really good amount of time.
Do you find a difference when you're rehabbing your guys with ankle injuries between maybe like the long striders, the more the pure deep threat individuals versus maybe some of the quicker slot individuals? And so do you see a difference in that rehab process in terms of how they recover for something like this ankle? And if so, how do you rehab those individuals differently?
Not enough for me to, I guess the only real, difference is, coming out of the stance. If you have someone that's like a D lineman, you just have to absorb a ton of force, but there's not as much cutting involved. So it's slightly different, I guess, but you're still trying to cover all your bases. Whereas a wide receiver, running back, like you have to make sure that they have so much proprioception in the ankle, and that every aspect of their route running, every aspect of their cuts looks and feels as good as possible. D-line, there's less variability in what they're doing on a play-to-play basis. So it's probably slightly easier for them or it's probably slightly easier for a therapist to say, okay, yeah, I don't have to prepare you to, run full speed straight ahead and then break on a 90-degree angle on your ankle. You just have to be able to push 300-pound men around. Like it's a different challenge, but the stability piece probably is slightly easier. I personally love the skill positions because there's so much to think about, and it's really cool to go through and watch different movement patterns and watch them run different routes and make different breaks and say, okay, how are we doing right to left? How does that feel strength wise? And how does that look as we break down the film? So I personally love, working with the skill guys because it's a lot of fun. Long story short, not a ton of difference. There's a slight difference in position. So maybe you have a slightly different focus, but as far as complexity, keep it about the same.
Yeah, I will dive into this once we get to the Eddie Jackson episode and we talk more about Liz Frank and stuff like that. But mm-hmm. I mean, that one is one that always, I think I handle a bit differently if I have a bigger dude, maybe who's like a lineman mm-hmm. with you needing that foot stability versus like an Eddie Jackson, who's going to be more just one cut downhill. But I mean, if that's crazy too, right? I mean, barely, a couple inches difference in terms of where that occurs and how much different you're going to look at that.
Exactly. And that one's much more of the arch support that's needed and how much force is going through your foot. That one, definitely there is a slight difference. But as far as ankles go, maybe the skill guys are more complex, but if you're doing a good job rehabbing, the overall plan doesn't change much.
And so how do you find that balance where, I have my thought process on this, obviously, but between when you're merging from rehab into more performance, because like you said, these guys are hungry, they want to get going. You know, they're just, they may be sitting there and you're doing some of your ankle isometrics when you're very, very first starting. You're like, let's get going. And you're just like, okay, I'll slow down a second. How do you find that balance? Where does the blending occur for you? And then ultimately, when do you get that full transition to, okay, we're popping forward into this is more performance and getting you ready for the season mode?
Yeah. So I like to sprinkle in performance stuff as soon as possible. So for an ankle injury, we can still work upper body motor patterns and upper body integrations. You're just doing it. You're not doing it running. You're just doing it at a standstill, maybe bouncing in place, maybe doing it on your knees. So you can start to integrate all that fun stuff early on, as long as you're creative. And as long as you understand how the person is supposed to move. So, you know, we can do some rope flow. We can do a lot of hand-eye coordination stuff. We can do a lot of core, like cross patterns. So we can do a lot of the, like, quote-unquote performance stuff. It's just not running. When it comes to the team, you're not going to progress anyone faster than the team wants to progress anyone. And so I said this the other day, it's a little bit more reactionary, but you know, you follow the best available methods, you follow the best available protocols. And then once guys check the certain boxes that allow them to advance to the next section of the protocol, then you advance to the next section of the protocol. And so you know, you got to walk before you can run, you got to run in a straight line before you can change direction, all that good stuff. And so it's fairly simple. If you follow the best, you know, the best available data, the best available research, it's literally just, all right, we're going to keep going. Okay. Boom. You check this box. Now we move on to the next thing.
And so I'm curious on your perspective on this too. So for you, in every case is obviously going to be different. What are some of your check boxes that say, okay, I'm after something like an ankle injury that something like Darnell dealt with? What are your check boxes that say, okay, we can start this light jog now?
Yeah. So I have just really two big things that kind of you check in with each time, and that's strength. So different isometric strength pieces, whether it's you know, calf raise, hold, or certain reps, or you know, balance pieces. So kind of that strength piece. And then tissue healing has a very predictable timeline. And so I go a lot based on the tissue healing timeline that is pretty well documented. I don't have every piece memorized because, you know, there's different grades of injury have different timelines.
Oh, it's all over the place.
You know, I don't have that memorized. I generally, you know, look it up each time depending on the severity. And then, you know, grade one's easy. Grade two varies a little bit. And then as you go up, you know, it's a little bit more variable. So I go with a lot of the strength-based things. And then, you know, as the tissue healing timeline kind of naturally progresses, I know that we're about in this range and you have requisite strength here. Now we can move forward and do something slightly more complex.
Yeah, absolutely. I know my clinic is lucky enough. We have this unit called Dorsa V, which is, you know, essentially this injury measurement tool, and you can run the individual through that. And the thing that's nice about it gives you these really objective measurements of saying your knee is collapsing at this many degrees per second, right? Your ankle's this many degrees when you're doing this movement pattern. Yeah. And this is just a PSA for anyone listening. If you are coming back from a major injury and the only thing that your therapist, your chiropractor, your whoever does is like a single leg hop test, get out, because that is not all you should be doing. So that's just, I have to get on my soapbox for a second.
Yeah, there's a lot more to it than just, you know, jumping up and landing on one foot. There's a lot more to it.
It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year.
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations. Forgotten. The history. The
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. Win. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
All right, so now more specifically, some of like the training performance side of this. What was last year? Like, what were some of the focuses that you and Darnell had in terms of going into this season?
Yeah, so last year, a lot of, and I said this recently on a podcast, a lot of like improving on the margins. So what are things that he struggles with in his game? And then how do we fix those individual pieces? So it wasn't like, I really want to get better running a corner, or I really want to get faster, or I really want to get more agile, or, you know, it wasn't that sort of thing. It was like, hey, this feels this way as I'm coming off the line. This feels this way on this break. This feels this way on this break. And then you go and watch film and you're like, okay, how can we train that? There wasn't any individual, like, overarching thing. It was a lot of what feels like it needs to be improved for you. What do we see on film? Now let's attack that. Tons of hand-eye coordination stuff. We, you know, progressed him further and further with hand-eye coordination stuff. And we actually learned a lot this season and this offseason already that we're, you know, going to implement for this upcoming year. And I think Darnell is going to feel a massive difference from what we did last year to what we did this year as far as hand-eye coordination goes. So I think there, you know, some things that we learned that we can definitely do better. So a lot of that, like, what is the marginal piece that you want to get better at? And then let's, you know, let's train it, let's break down the film, and then let's see how it feels once we implement.
And is that similar for this year? Would you say hand-eye coordination is still like near the top of the list? And if not, are there any other ones that are kind of popping out from what you saw in film last year?
Yeah, hand-eye coordination is going to always be the big one. You know, just how well can you catch the ball? How difficult a situation can you catch the ball in? There were a handful of situations where he wanted to make the catch and didn't. And, you know, we're going to make sure that if those such situations come up again, he's able to make that play. So, you know, certain, you know, specific situations that we'll train. And then really for him this year, it's going to be, can we make your body feel symmetrical? Can we make your injured leg, and not can, but like, how can we make your injured leg feel just as good as it did before, right? That's the big goal this year. So it's less of how do we make you a better technician? How do we improve your movement patterns? More of a, how do we make you, you know, 100% and stay 100%.
One thing you had mentioned on a previous podcast was how, you know, injury prevention, we talk about this all the time, how injury prevention isn't a thing. Injury reduction mm-hmm. is one of the main things. So let's take the play that's actually right behind me on the screen here, which I know you sent me this picture when I jokingly talked about Devontae Smith not even making the catch. How it was pretty cool. And you were like, excuse me, Darnell can actually make this catch. What are the ways that, you know, the way Darnell really did get injured coming down right on someone else's foot, coming down on turf, that's not fantastic. How do you prepare the proprioception for a foot angle for an athlete who is running at 100%, jumping up, getting jostled, getting pushed down, and then trying to land who knows where, just worrying about getting their feet in bounds and making sure that foot, that ankle, that knee, et cetera, is stable?
Yeah. So obviously the most important thing is to find ways to replicate those feelings without risking injury in training, right? So like, it's not like you can just throw jump balls and say, hey, go up and get this and don't care about how you land, right? So you can't do that. So it's being creative and finding ways to replicate, like, all right, what do we do for a jump ball? What do we do with collision? What do we do? You know, how do you absorb impact? And then I've been a big fan of body tempering. And so, you know, body tempering just to toughen up the tissues. And for those of you that don't know, body tempering is just a really intense massage, essentially, usually with tools. and you're if you've ever seen those monks that like can take a sword to the throat and it doesn't cut their skin, it's because their body has been tempered and conditioned to not break in those situations. And so we'll do a lot of that stuff. And then, you know, again, just how can we kind of replicate game situations in a non-dangerous way? So when you're on the field, it's not your first time moving in that pattern. It might not be the exact situation, right? You're not going to, just like the picture behind you, you're not going to be able to replicate that play every single time in training, nor do you want to spend your time just training that. But you can find a bunch of, you know, scenarios that come up regularly that you can, you know, find different ways and creative ways to, you know, train through.
How important is the ocular training for someone like Darnell? And I know, you know, I'll challenge individuals with things like synaptic glasses. If you don't know what those are, Google them. They're really cool. People listening, things like that. So how often are you integrating the integration of ocular into, you know, spinal cord reactivity and then forward?
Every single training session, essentially. Anytime we're doing catching, we are doing something to manipulate the eyes, to make it more difficult, speed up his processing time, and then just help him track the ball better. So I think some of what we want to focus on this year, some of what I want to focus on this year with a lot of my players, not just Darnell, but a lot of the guys, is your brain's ability to predict what's going to happen. Based on ball flight path, based on, you know, just what you see in an instant, can your brain fill in a gap that as it's happening, so you don't have to, you know, track a ball the entire way, or you don't have to see a defender the entire way. Can your brain fill in gaps because it's, you know, so good at predicting what's happening, or so good at using its peripheral vision? That's kind of something that I want to work in with really all of my athletes this year.
I wish I had the article off the top of my head, but I don't. I'm sorry to everyone listening. But there was one that I remember reading where they took a bunch of basketball players and they showed them film. And they just showed essentially the ball leaving the person's hand, froze that film. And they compared that to basketball players, just people who watch the game regularly, and then non-basketball watchers. And they found a significant difference in the predictability, player's ability to predict if that shot goes in, compared to someone who just watches basketball in their free time, compared to someone who doesn't watch at all. So there's absolutely so much truth to, you know, repeatability, that processing, that peripheral ability to integrate into yourself, and just how you can take that. And again, like Dr. Richard was saying, fill in the gaps. And it's really, really cool. And that's just another example where, you know, imagery within yourself, whether it's just sitting there and thinking things through, whether you're integrating the, you know, projectors, watching other people's film, it's really important for your athletes.
Yeah, absolutely. And one thing that I think I use this with a handful of receivers is a lot of people will do the, oh, turn around, pick up the ball quickly, and then, you know, make the catch, right? So I throw the ball, you flip your hips, and then you have to find where the ball is and make the catch. The other thing that happens is, what if the ball is coming to you and you lose sight of it at the last second? Can you still catch the ball? And can your brain predict where the ball is going to be based on how it left the hand? So like, all right, I'm going to throw you the ball, and then as the ball's in the air, you're going to close your eyes and still catch the ball. So like that sort of a thing, like you can manipulate at what point the player is seeing the ball, and then can they predict the rest of the trajectory for the ball?
It's I love this stuff. This stuff is so cool. Yeah. We talked about Justin before. I think it was a couple months ago in an episode, and we talked about Justin's top speed. Have you clocked Darnell's top speed? And if so, what is it?
I haven't gotten Darnell's top speed personally. I know that the team tracks it, and so just based off of his and I could probably go figure it out based on certain routes that he's run. My guess is in a game, he's in the 21 to 22 range. If, you know, feeling 100% fresh legs, all that, my guess is the 21 to 22 miles per hour. If you go no pads, I'll bet he could hit, you know, 23. And I know Velas has hit 24. I think he hit 24 miles an hour in his 40. So I don't know if Darnell hits 24, but he's definitely in the 23 mile an hour club if there's no pads and all that.
That's just wild. It really is. These guys are amazing in terms of what they can do.
I always think about it. It's like they're running so fast that they would get a speeding ticket in a school zone.
Which is just wild to think about.
Crazy. It's crazy.
All right. So I got to ask you one more question before I let you get out of here. I know you got some stuff you got to do. Yeah, I think I lost you for a quick second there. Put on they were to call this little segment Dr. GM. Give me one draft prospect you would love to see in the Bears next year and a reason why.
Oh, man. This is tough. Obviously, you look at the defensive side of the ball. You look at like Will Anderson and Jalen Carter, and those guys would obviously be fun. I think a guy like, one of my favorite receivers in the draft is Quentin Johnston, and I think he would be a lot of fun. I think he's a great yards after the catch guy. I think he's a great contested ball guy. So I think he would be a lot of fun. In this offense, just, you know, giving Justin another weapon. So I'll go with Quentin Johnston.
I love him. I know a lot of people are soured on him a little bit in terms of him versus Jordan Addison versus JSN. But I do. I just think he'd be a really fun receiver to pair with Justin. And, you know, obviously Quentin Johnston's going to listen to this podcast. When he does, he now needs to hit you up, right? Exactly. You know, for post combine stuff, all that.
Yep. I wish I had a deeper, you know, like linebacker, deeper, you know, offensive line or tight end prospect that I really love, but I gotta stick in the first round because that's kind of where I'm at with my knowledge right now, and go with my guy Quentin Johnston.
Don't worry, I'm gonna ask you each time you pop on for this little mini series, so now you got time to prepare for the next couple.
Perfect. Now I know that it's on here, so I'll have a couple other good deep dive names.
Gonna pull out the Owen Papo linebacker out of Auburn next time.
Yeah, exactly. We're going to get a D2 player. I'll make sure I have at least one D2 player that I want in like the sixth round.
Nice. Well, I can't thank you enough for coming on. Follow, if you're not, please go ahead. Follow MT. He's on Twitter at Dr. Risher, DrRisher. Instagram, Dr.MichaelRisher. And of course, even better would be to go check him out and his wife at the Rehab Lab on West Armitage in Logan Square. Both awesome people. I've worked with Dr. Risher myself. He helped me with some shoulder pain that which I could not get rid of. And so I'm doing much, much better now. And honestly, if he's good enough for Justin Fields, Darnell Mooney, he's definitely good enough for you. So, you know, get out there and get better, really. I mean, there's too many of us walking around with injuries and they're hurting us on a day-to-day basis. Let's take care of those issues.
Appreciate it. Thanks for having me on. This is a blast. I always love coming on here. I'm excited to get on next time and talk about more guys.
Yeah, absolutely. But that's all we got for today. So bear down, everyone.